On Big Lives, we take a single cultural icon.
People like Jane Fonda, George Michael, Little Richard.
And we pull apart the story behind the image.
And we do this by digging through the BBC's vast archives.
Discovering forgotten interviews that changed exactly how we see these giants of our culture.
We're here for the messy, the brilliant, the human version of our heroes.
I'm Emmanuel Joachi.
I'm Kai Wright.
And this is Big Lives.
Listen to Big Lives wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. This is Keep It. I'm Louis Fertel.
Oh, this is a new version of You Though, Baby.
Oh, it is?
Because it's your birthday today.
It not only is it my birthday, it's, according to Madonna's Kabbalah rabbi, the age of wisdom. 40.
You know what? And this is no shade at all, but I feel like you've been 40 your whole life.
I was born to be 40.
My
references have always been 10 times my actual age. Like, at age 4, I was like, let's talk about Anne Margaret.
Because there are some children where I'm like, look, who's this 40-year-old man?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like you are glowing today. Like, you have come. You've been waiting for this day.
Yeah. That said, again, the thrill of being young and having all these old references is people are like, who is this anachronistic, gifted, if you will, young man? And now it's like, oh, you're just some gay guy now. Oh, you're 40 and you make old references? You don't say. You must be a homosexual and nothing else.
And I don't see a wrinkle on that face.
Yeah, you know what? Let me tell you something. This is just the truth. I'm one of the whitest people I know. Like, the lighting people here do a good job.
Yes.
Like, they put like some sunset colors face. This is gonna crack. So I'm just gonna say, next five years, you better keep me in check.
Good thing you got me here, baby. We're going to get that skincare. I'm going to give you all the black products you need, baby. I'm going to slather that Vaseline on your face like a black mama should. You're going to be just fine. Don't you worry about them wrinkles.
Oh, right. No, put like layers of margarine on me. Whatever.
Me and you, neither one of us is going to age till 82.
Okay,
don't you worry about it.
You know who, I think the person who has aged best of all time is Aaron Neville. That's what I'm going for.
I did not expect.
And he's jacked.
You know who else just had a birthday? Your fellow Leo, Halle Berry.
Oh, well, that's like a totally different
league. Have you seen her? And she's 60.
Also, I mean, she can't get through a press junket without every interviewer being like, I can't believe how beautiful you are. And she's like, please, moving on.
I know she can't. I know she probably is sick of it, but we are not sick of saying it.
No.
And I want to say, I think you're in good company.
Right.
And you're a Leo. I like Leo.
You know, also, I relate to Halle Berry because I am a Catwoman who plays basketball. That's how I keep it taut.
Well, I'm so happy that you're spending your birthday with all of us.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yes.
I've been doing this podcast like 8.5 years. It's meaningful to be here.
This is a holiday.
Yes. But no. And so we're going to celebrate the holiday by going through a really celebratory movie trailer. Are you familiar with this Wicker shit?
Okay. People are losing their shit over this movie.
Well, you know who's losing their shit? Olivia Colman in this trailer. She's getting fucked by a Wicker man, and she's not in her right mind.
Oh, my God. You saying it out loud makes it even more horrifying. People, the women who are being attracted to this really makes me worried about the dating landscape we're in, that everyone is fantasizing being with this Wicker man instead of a real man.
Excuse me. Last week we were railing against Disney adults. We were all wrong.
We were.
The answer is women watching movies. It turns out they are unwell.
And women and men, apparently this Wicker man, and people are really talking about this like it's a real man. I've seen people go to Home Goods and pose next to wicker chairs.
No.
I am not kidding.
Unacceptable. If you don't know what this movie is, Olivia Colman stars in this movie. So she's in kind of an old-timey village. She is a, I guess, ragingly horny woman. And she asks this craftsman.
That works at the fish market. Like, apparently she's not a catch in their town.
Right. Okay. Eugene Shallot? Look at this review. She wants a husband, so she asks this craftsman played by Peter Dinklage to make her a husband out of wicker.
Yeah.
And through the magic of movies, we get a man played by Alexander Skarsgård, who, I'm just going to say it, gets to do weird things too often.
He does.
This is a conventional man. He is tall and debonair and should be tall and debonair.
You know what? He has a lot of fun. I think I was first introduced to him during True Blood, and he's always been this heartthrob. I love when someone who is considered a heartthrob just does some silly shit.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That's also straight male privilege. You know, it's like,
yes,
because they don't love being only attractive.
Right.
So like, I'm weird too.
I gotta do something else. I'm quirky.
Yeah, I'm Jake Gyllenhaal in Velvet Buzzsaw or whatever this fucking shit is.
I'm I'm wearing shirtless, no sleeves to a premiere. See?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I have a quasi queer twist on this red carpet.
That's true. That is very true. That being said, I do have one qualm.
Yeah.
And it is his hair. The Wicker Man's hair is very like straw like. Maybe the hair is made of straw. I just felt like they could have got a better lace front.
Oh, please. Also, I have a problem with the fact that he's fucking wicker. I'm sorry, watching this man, you know what the illustration of this character reminds me of? This is after your time, but like as in when I was a little kid, there were books like that were like fractured fairy tales. One was like about the stinky cheese man. The way it was like illustrated is sort of the way this wicker guy looks. It reminds me of a fractured fairy tale sort of situation.
Very much so. I'm just nervous that somebody gonna set him afire. How do we keep him safe?
Also, I'm sure everybody's asking this, but are we gonna see the wicker dick? One, two.
We've got to.
And also, do you really want to have sex with Wicker? I'm not having that trip to Pier One.
She seemed like it was hitting the right spots. Maybe he, you know, maybe Peter Dinklage's character did something to it.
I'm just saying. I don't know if that rattan can like handle that.
I think there's like a fan base of it now. They're calling themselves like the Wickers or something. It's very strange.
Oh no, I just don't need to be involve myself with it as a subculture.
I will say we have often said that we want more original screenplays.
Oh, I'm happy for it. Also, again, Olivia Colman is depraved in this.
Yes, which I mean, I think that's when she's at her best.
Yeah.
Is when she...
Well, it's funny. Did you ever see her in The Lost Daughter, which is mostly a dramatic performance, but she has moments of sort of drunken liberation, and she really plays a kind of... There's a scariness to her in a way when she's accessing that part of herself that I think is interesting.
That I think is fun to watch, and it'll be different in this because I'm hoping this is supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah.
Is this a comedic rom-com kind of?
I think so. I think it's meant to be a bit droll.
Yes.
You know, like all things Olivia Colman does.
I'm just worried for that weird subset of people who is going to make this like sexualize a thing. Like we're going to be seeing people pose in like bikinis on wicker chairs. It's just going to get it's going to get really weird when this comes out.
Oh yeah. No. Because, you know, as we just said, the people are unwell.
If people are unwell and people looking for partners, it's going to be some seances happening, honey. It's just going to be a bunch of people walking the red carpet as wicker. It's going to get weird. But you know what? I think 2026 is one of the weirdest years we've had where nothing surprises me. So why not?
Oh, yeah. Well, also, we'll be talking about comedies this episode, actually, because our guest is the fabulous Monica Barbaro, an Oscar nominee for A Complete Unknown, where she played Joan Baez, to Timothée Chalamet's Bob Dylan. But she's also in this new movie, One Night Only, with Callum Turner, which is, I think, marks a very solid return for the rom-com.
I think so, too.
It has a very strange arch concept about premarital sex being banned all year except one night when everybody in New York City, like, runs to each other to, like, hook up in the streets.
This sounds like my personal nightmare, but it's interesting.
It sounds a bit sticky.
Because I don't know how we're going to do this. They would have had to lock me up, baby. I ain't going to last.
Yeah, right.
I ain't going to make it. We have a lot to get into this week, you guys. So we're also going to talk about Ariana Grande's new album. And obviously, we're not going to skirt the controversy that's following it. So we got a lot to get into, but before we go to break, I've got a message for any pro-democracy Keep It listeners out there. If you haven't gotten tickets for Crooked Con yet, there are some exciting new faces that are going to be joining us. At Crooked, we believe the answer to right-wing authoritarianism is a big, welcoming, fun pro-democracy movement. So we've invited some of the biggest, funniest voices online to all-day Crooked Con. At Crooked Con, you'll have the chance to meet creators and new media personalities who make sense of the news with humor and hot takes. They'll be bopping around the Washington Convention Center, hosting happy hours, Q&As and workshops for attendees. They'll also be making content because what happens at Crooked Con ends up online for every political nerd to see.
So check out which creators are joining us so far at crookedcon.com and grab your tickets today. We'll be there too. See you in DC. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've heard me talk about BetterHelp for a long time, but I don't know that we've ever actually talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. The reviews are updated every day with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. So please visit betterhelp.com/reviews to see for yourself.
BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people who have actually used the service speaks for itself. More than 6 million people have used BetterHelp globally. The consistent feedback from real users makes it very easy to see why so many people continue to use and choose BetterHelp.
BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience. They also hold all required education, training, and certifications across a range of mental health specialties. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. Answer a few questions, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, and switch therapists at any time if it's not the right fit. So see the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com/keepit. That's better, HELP.com/keepit.
This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace gives you everything you need to offer services and get paid, all in one place. From consultations to events and experiences, showcase your offerings with a customizable website designed to attract clients and grow your business. Get paid on time with professional on-brand invoices and online payments. Plus, streamline your workflow with built-in appointment scheduling and email marketing tools.
With Squarespace's collection of cutting-edge design tools, anyone can build a bespoke online presence that perfectly fits their brand or business. Start with Blueprint AI, Squarespace's AI-enhanced website builder, to get a fully custom website in just a few steps, using basic information about your industry, goals, and personality to generate premium-quality content and personalized design recommendations. Squarespace also offers a complete library of professionally designed and award-winning website templates with options for every use and category. No matter where you start, your website is flexible to what you need. With intuitive drag-and-drop editing, beautiful styling options, unrivaled visual design effects, on-brand AI content, and more ways to list what you offer. No experience required.
Every dream needs a domain. Squarespace domains make it easy to find the best name for your business at one fair, all-inclusive price. No hidden fees or add-ons required. Every Squarespace domain comes with advanced privacy and security tools included to ensure your domain remains online and protected. Plus, Squarespace provides everything you need to bring more of your dream to life. Whether that means building a website or adding a professional email service, don't wait to claim your name. Invest in your dream domain today.
Fundraise directly on your website and grow your impact with built-in donation tools. Create a professional, on-brand website that makes it easy to accept one-time or recurring contributions and engage supporters. With built-in email campaigns and marketing tools, you can connect with your community and inspire more people to support your cause. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/keepit to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/keepit. Over the weekend, Ariana Grande released her 8th studio album, Petal. Grande teamed up with her past collaborators and pop powerhouses Max Martin and Ilya to produce and co-write the album. It features lead singles Hate That I Made You Love Me and the eponymous Petal, and is heading towards a number one debut. Nina, what did you think of the album?
Well, she's a brilliant singer.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that I can't say that I disliked it. I really enjoy hearing her. That being said, I think she had some things to say. Obviously, we're even talking about the single Petal. Ariana's not someone who shies away from controversy. Like she's had a kind of a controversial career. Like, she has things that pop in, whether it's about her love life, the people that she's been with, the experiences, the public fodder. Like, she does talk about it, right?
Yeah.
She talks about her exes. I like that she's imperfect while sounding incredible. That being said, I feel like she was having fun. Does that make sense?
Which, by the way, you know, is not really an expectation I have. Like, by all means, be serious and even somber from time to time. And also, she's really established this lane of, like, R&B with this kind of girlish flair that can get pretty sexual or sassy. Like, I think she's really dominated that. That said, I think she's sort of remaining in that lane.
Yes.
Like, I didn't see this album as, like, a great step forward in any way. And in fact, a lot of the subject matter of this album I thought was shockingly repetitive for her. It's like, still kind of bragging that, like, I can fuck better than she can.
Right.
Which, by the way, I love saying shit like
that.
Like, by all means, that's my life.
It's just not anything new.
Right. And I actually like the single, the Hate That
Petal.
I Made You Love Me.
Oh, that one.
Single. It doesn't sound like Max Martin to me at all. I think we actually underestimate still somehow the diversity of what that man can do. I'm not saying he's entirely responsible for the track, but I like the sort of There's a kind of lightheaded, woozy vibe to it that I think
it is
sort of fitting and adds a strangeness.
I felt like that when I was listening to Freak. Like, yeah. You know, it's not that she doesn't give you anything. I think she goes in and she lays it all down. That being said, I do love when she gets spicy. I do miss that era of like very R&B.
Yeah.
And almost like you think a rapper's going to come on the wax with her. You know, I think that's like a really good sweet spot for her that I think is a good way to clap back to. So I would have loved to hear a little bit more like spicier R&B from her.
Yeah. What happened to rap song collaborations?
Yeah.
This was a Grammy category I used to care about.
It doesn't really happen anymore.
It was a real boon for Ja Rule. You know,
right.
He would simply ask, what's love? And Ashanti would offer an answer.
Yes. You know, you got the Gwyneth Paltrow and Eve. Like, I feel like we get people to guest on it, but it doesn't feel like collaborations anymore. I mean, I feel like maybe we get it from Jay-Z and Beyonce, but there was an era where that's all you heard. So maybe we burnt out on it. But I have loved to just, I don't know. It just seems like a fun place to be.
Also, I just want to say that was not Ja Rule. That was Fat Joe. Ja Rule was always on time.
Yes.
With Ashanti.
Yes.
Ashanti really was like, here's 2001. I get the whole thing.
Ashanti, even J-Lo and Ja Rule had
they had
their moment. So I do kind of miss even like when 50 Cent and Olivia did Candy Shop. Like,
yeah.
I do kind of miss like hearing that. Not that I expected her to do it. But, you know, I think
she's capable of it.
Well, when she kind of sing raps, she be in her bag.
Yeah, no, my favorite Ariana Grande song is still, I believe, her debut single, The Way.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about that, like the light bounce of it with the sauciness inside it. I really like
and
that for
her. And she can talk her shit. Like, she's, you know.
She has a whip smart quality, too. Like, don't fuck with this, actually.
She does. I actually feel like she really does speak up for herself in a way. Like, there's something about her that wants to make things clear for the stuff that she wants to talk about. She's not always going to clear everything up, right?
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that love interest from Wicked, but
That
I
hasn't
don't know
come
if we're
going
to hear about that, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we did. She does lay it on the line, but I agree with you. I don't feel like there's anything different on this, other than there is a kind of part of me that's like, before the announcement was made that we'll get into about like her slowing down, I was kind of like, an album right after this whole Wicked tour that took several years. Like, you don't want to just rest?
Yeah. And also, by the way, her last album, period, is just 2 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and also she's basically still touring the material from that album.
Absolutely.
So for this to come out so fast is actually pretty shocking. Yes, we should also talk about the pedal video, which like trades on this like idea of being having a body that people are constantly commenting on. She's auditioning with a whole bunch of auditioners for a commercial where men are writing disparaging things down about like, you should lose weight, things like that. And I would say I like that she tackled that material in the video. I would also say we have seen that several times before in music videos. I didn't find it particularly incisive. At the end, she does take a chainsaw to the men who are saying this and kill them. And it looks like the animation of it looks like something out of like Tim Burton's Frankenweenie or something. That was very cute, kind of funny. I didn't think it moved the needle in any other way. That said, we must say about Ariana Grande, and you just brought this up, she's basically taking a step back from being public facing in any way for a while. She's dropped out of Sunday in the Park with George, which that was going to be a huge moment for her.
Yes.
I mean, that's an astounding Pulitzer winning musical, and I think she would have like ventured into a new lane in her career that would have been really fascinating. So she's taking a step back from that. And I also think it's worth noting that we don't really know what this means.
Right.
Like, is she taking a step back from work altogether? How long is it going to be? Like, for instance, she has that Meet the Fockers sequel coming out in fall, too. So, like, will she be part of that press cycle? We don't know. But what are your thoughts on this particular strange moment?
Well, back to the video, you know, when we were talking about, like, the imagery of it, I kind of thought, like, is she the biggest takeaway I got from the video was her appearance.
Yeah.
You know, which we know people were saying, like, the outfit choices, they were intentional. Her taking a break, I think she should. And what I didn't love was the publicist statement that basically kind of said, because of the discourse, she's taking the break. Not because she needs a break, just because she's been working so much. It kind of put it, to me, I felt like it put it back on fans. Instead, it almost felt accusatory from her team. I want to read the statement because I want, maybe not everybody heard it, and I think it's important for the framing that we're talking about. So a representative for Grande tells People exclusively, Ariana will be taking a step back from visibility after she completes the Eternal Sunshine tour. She looks forward to finishing the tour and ending on a high note, both healthily and happily, and then taking a much deserved break from public facing and work appearances, which has led to endless ongoing public scrutiny. The tour has been a beautiful experience for her. She loves her fans and has loved every minute of this tour so much.
I don't think that'll stop the scrutiny, personally.
Yeah, it's not going to stop the scrutiny because it's not being addressed. And it's kind of being pivoted that, you know, I think every front-facing person experiences scrutiny on some level. Hers has been incredibly high. And I feel like we're in a new era, right? I think every decade, maybe now even every 5 years, in pop culture specifically, there's kind of a new framing of how things are, right? We had like the socialites and like the Kim Kardashians and Lindsay Lohans of it all and how that was addressed. And then things started to go too far with the paparazzi and things started to be called back a little bit. And now even I don't even see as many paparazzi shots as celebs as I used to. But online discourse has increased by 100% in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
The discourse over women's bodies and appearances is incessant.
Well, it's very like Dumois or Reddit culture.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like it's even if there is less paparazzi, for example, there's plenty more places to comment and comment with everybody.
Right. And that being said, people expect transparency. And I guess the question that I pose is how much of somebody are we expected to get, right? Like, is an artist allowed to still just be an artist, to come in, they perform, they do the movies, they do the films, they do the tours? Is that enough? Because it seems like the answer is no, that people now want an explanation for your appearance, for the decisions you make. And I'm trying to figure out if that's a fair ask or not, right? Like, is that fair for people to want a definitive answer to why her body has changed? But also, if she's giving everything she has, if she feels that she's giving her heart and soul into this business, is it okay for her to keep whatever's going on to herself, to her friends, to her family and her team? Like, is she supposed to give an explanation in this instance? And I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm. It's a delicate, strange conversation to have. Also, just this particular pop culture moment is weird to me because she has just released a video that's specifically about the particular judgments, male gaze, et cetera, inflicted upon her that maybe she would not care to hear otherwise, but it's maybe all she's hearing.
Right.
And then she's saying, and now I'm going away. So it's almost like have this conversation without me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, I would argue this has already been happening.
But if it's spotlighted, right? If in Petal specifically, the body discourse is happening in the visuals that we're seeing. That I liken it to like if Beyonce did Lemonade and then said we couldn't talk about her relationship. You're like, but you just did an album on it. You're calling, the visuals show you being upset about this man cheating. And like, there's discourse about this on purpose. So it kind of, it feels like a gotcha almost to not have the conversations. And of course, it's going to always point back to you. That being said, like, I don't love any conversations about bodies in general because we just have no idea what people are going through.
Right.
And I think having strangers comment on your body is fucking strange instead of the art, right? But at that same time, it was a visual placement in Petal.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, it's a plot point, I would say. No, it's strange. And also it's like the people online talking about what they should be able to say, whatever, coming out of a place of concern. I just don't know of much online commentary that doesn't seem pretty prescriptive about what she should do.
Right.
And like someone of her caliber doesn't need that. Again, it reminds me of what I think was disturbing about Britney Spears' whole ordeal, which was people coming from a place of concern, but also being utterly condescending.
And
being like,
I know
what's better for you than you do.
Right.
You know?
And there's also, you know, a level of shame that people are kind of shaming her appearance. And some folks are saying, well, this is concern. However, you don't know what's going on.
Right. Also, you expressing a knee-jerk reaction is not necessarily concern.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's you getting to say, I get to say this because I get to say it.
Yeah. And I mean, look, you're free to say anything you want. But studies have shown, especially when it comes to bodies, and if there is, and I'm not saying she has an eating disorder, but if there is an eating disorder involved, shame does not help.
Right.
Shame isn't helpful for either side of the spectrum for, you know, for talking about somebody's body. It's not, that's not helpful. So if your goal is to be helpful to her, then what you're doing is not helpful. However, I do think there are people who have genuine concern.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, certainly. Right. Right.
You know, but
she is a beloved entertainer.
Sure. Yes. She is. And her fan base really loves her. That being said, I don't know, you know, having rose-colored glasses on, I don't know what's helpful. But at the same time, I think at the end of the day, you don't know this person. You don't know her. And I think I remember, and not to bring it back to me, but I remember at my heaviest when I had, I'm down over the last 2 years, I've lost 70 pounds. And that was triggered by a health, I was diagnosed as a diabetic. And my doctor was like, okay, we got to do something to get you healthier, you know, so you keep your limbs, you know. And I was also dealing with the depression of a friend passing away and a cousin passing away and a health diagnosis from a family member. All of that was happening at the same time. And I remember the comments were saying, talking about my weight so much. And it was the most unhelpful shit I had ever seen, because I was like, I know what I look like. I know what I'm going through. I'm also dealing with so much right now. And these comments are putting me over the edge, because it's not like I'm oblivious to it. Even if it looks like I am, I just am not giving you all of this information. And I didn't feel the need to come on. And that's on like a half of a percent of what Ariana is dealing with. I couldn't imagine having to defend this and also publicly, like, we don't know what's going on. We don't know.
The artist is not on this journey with you, you know, right. The people looking on. And I feel like they kind of believe they're all in it together. And I think that's also very an alien feeling for any celebrity, I'm sure. I also feel like there's something in particular about eating disorders that even the casual onlooker feels like they get it.
Right.
Quote unquote, get it. You know, like they, you know, like I've seen this before. It's like, oh, it's about this. It's about this control thing. It's about this. But it's like, again, as you just said, not only do you not know her, this is coming from a place of amateur commentary.
Sure.
And you're pretending to be an expert, which I think is also, you know, again, as somebody who is an extreme Karen Carpenter fan, she's the reason we have the word anorexia basically in the mm-hmm. American lexicon. It's like you look at what people were commenting even then, and it's like, I'm sure that was not helpful to somebody who was at wit's end for many other reasons
yeah.
and that were weight-related and otherwise. I'm not saying all the commentary I'm seeing is worthless about this. There are people who know what they're talking about. But also, I think people should consider where they're coming from if they don't really know what they're talking about. I'm just saying, I grew up with somebody who survived a very complex and horrible eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And one of the first comments she ever got on it was being called into class one day. And the teacher just said to her, the comment was, you should stop that.
Oh.
And like, that was as far as the sympathy went.
Oh my gosh.
As just like, you can turn this thing off. And I think people don't realize that like telling someone what to do, especially as it pertains to things like this, is incredibly damaging.
Mm. You know? I think like we have lost a lot. There's almost no empathy when it comes to bodies.
Yeah.
And there's also no pleasing people. If you're too big, you're too curvy, you're too thin, like there's really never a happy medium. There's always something that people are criticizing. And on her level, which is a percentile that most people will never understand, I feel like it has to be incredibly maddening. The only thing you can do is not go on social media and really turn your brain off to the commentary and deal with what you're working through. I think we've learned through what happened with Chadwick Boseman that, you know, there were so I remember seeing him thinner and there was so much commentary. He had gone and sat down on LeBron James show, The Shop, and he was just joking and laughing. And so many people made memes and were talking about what's going on. Comedians were talking about it, not knowing that he was dealing with this public battle that he didn't feel the need to bring to the public. But his family knew, his wife knew, his friends knew. And so I think about keeping things private and people want to be able to, like, the stress that adds to your healing is impactful. So, you know, I try not to comment on a body unless they bring it up.
Yeah.
You know, if she was to say, this is what I'm dealing with, then I can comment. And as much as I care about her well-being, she does not know me.
Yeah.
My care and concern is in an empty room.
Uh-huh.
Where does this go? Where does your care and concern go for someone you do not know? Just because they're a public figure, you don't know them.
Right. Also, I just want to say, you know, the way people want her to get help. And again, that comes from a place of genuine concern. I think it's like the kind of help you're talking about, if you are talking about an eating disorder, is beyond like the kind of help that people need for anything else. It is so, I think, and this is just my casual knowledge. I am not claiming to be a medical expert in any way. Unbelievably draining and unbelievably character changing and life changing. Like the amount of things that have to change for that to be successful, I think are just bewildering and require a version of sympathy that I am not seeing a lot of online.
Yeah, I agree. You know? And I made the decision a long time ago when I started, you know, talking about pop culture, is that I wasn't going to make any assumptions on people's bodies.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to assume, you know, people be like, are you pregnant? Like, I feel like we sometimes, and I know it's hard when you really love this person's artistry, but I think people, you know, have to learn that people are only going to do things in their own time. They're only going to do it in their own time. And because she's not addressing things publicly does not mean that she isn't dealing with it.
Right.
So I guess my question is, what do people want? Do they want to see a difference? Do they want her to talk about it? Do they want her to address her fans who are concerned? Because I think she did that. She just did a show on Monday night where she started to talk in her own words, because she said she didn't want things to get misconstrued with the statement that her publicist sent out. She wanted to talk directly to her fans and tell them how much she loved her, how much the tour meant to her, and how important they are to her. That being said, she left it at that. She didn't address, you know, what her body looked like. So I feel like she's telling us, I'm not talking about this shit. Mm-hmm. And whether it's to her detriment or not, if you've ever had a family member, and I'm not saying she's on anything, but I'm saying I've had family members who have been drug addicts. And I've done interventions, and there was nothing our care or concern could do until that person was ready to deal with it. And even when they were ready to deal with it, it didn't mean that they wanted to discuss it with all of us. It is an internal job, and it is hard enough telling the truth to yourself. So expecting her to share this truth with strangers is crazy to me. I don't care how front-facing you are.
Yeah.
She has a right to deal with this however she wants to. And what way it goes is not our business. And that's a control you have to let go, even if you love somebody. Expecting them to give you what you need when they are not ready is unfair, period.
Also, it must be said, that statement that she just gave was valuable, because my main question was, how impulsive was this? Like, was this like on a dime?
Right.
Like, was this following a new wave of conversation about her health, et cetera? But I was sort of heartened to realize, no, like that this is part of a plan. Also, additionally, what you just said, like, she has addressed comments about her body before. There's videos of her 3 years ago talking about how, you know, she's sick of people commenting on bodies, period. Whether or not it's even critical, even if it's complimentary, the feeling entitled to it and feeling like it's something that people want to hear and should take into like personal consideration is, you know, like I thought that was statement
when
enough,
she wants
really.
To address it, right? She has this impersonator that she's said, I want you to find your own way.
Yeah.
And basically, bitch, stop pretending to be me, like in a soft way. But she addressed it. So she has no problem addressing things when she's ready to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And again, we look at the imagery from Petal. She's kind of speaking about it in a way. Mm-hmm. But to me, I didn't take anything away from that other than the fact that she wants people, and specifically it sounds like men, to stop putting their onus on to women's bodies. And I think, like, if we talk about body shaming, it has to go in every direction. And I think ultimately, you know, when people get on online, they feel like they're just one voice of many, but I think those things penetrate. And I think you have to have responsibility. Like, take what's going on with her and have a conversation with people close to you. I think that's more impactful than putting it on Instagram and expecting someone to change because of a comment you made. Because it's not going to do anything.
Right. Also, I think in general, a lot of what we're talking about is a debate about what goes on in your text thread and what goes in the public view. And it's just like the moral of pop culture in the 2020s is just like, the entitlement, the awkwardness of what we're really talking about is, can't you just share this with somebody who fucking cares about you and knows who you are? Because you are just an ambient voice in the netherworld. And if I see a random ass comment that seems too critical or too snarky, I'm going to assume you're 11.
Yeah, I think, you know, listen, I'm a person that shares a lot with the people closest to me. And those who aren't close to me have no idea what's going on, what I'm going through. And I went through a severe depression after losing people close to me a couple of years ago. And people had no idea what I was going through. And it wasn't because I wanted to hide it. It was so sensitive to me. It wasn't anything I was willing to share. And I don't know how I would have dealt. And luckily, the reason I kept it private is because I just didn't want people being privy to it. But I think like having that responsibility is heavy for anyone. And I know that people will say, well, this is what she signed up for. Her fans are like her family. But I think like you've got to take the lead of them, not try to insert your lead or what you would hope you want them to do, even if you don't agree with it.
Yeah. We're still getting, again, more content from Ariana Grande later this year with that Meet the Fockers movie, which apparently is great because Robert De Niro said she was one of his great comedy scene partners or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone who works with her absolutely loves and enjoys her. And I think, you know, I don't think she's done with commenting on this. I think that she will address things, but I think it's going to be on her time. And I, you know, I don't think there's anything any Quentin can do to change that.
Jesus Christ, this woman has had such a fucking tumultuous career.
Yeah.
You know?
And she's not a perfect star.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people love her.
Yeah, totally. And now we're moving on to an interview with somebody who was nominated for an Oscar against Ariana Grande.
Oh.
Monica Barbaro is with us when we're back.
Keep It is brought to you by Acorns. There's not much you can do about the money you've got now, but if you want to do something about the money you could have tomorrow, Acorns wants to help. And with Acorns Potential Screen, you can find out what to do with your money and what it's capable of. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. Acorns is easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your spare money, even if all you got is spare change. Acorns grows with you, whether you're just starting out or thinking about settling down. Acorns supports your big and small goals across every life stage. The Acorns Potential Screen shows you the power of compounding and how your money could grow over time. Plus, you can quickly adjust how much you're investing every day, week, or month to make sure you're building towards your goals. Acorns, it's all in one. So there's no finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place.
Here's what I love about Acorns. It's working right now. While I'm doing this podcast and talking about important topics like Charlie XCX being funny, it is doing what it says it's going to do, which is making money for me that doesn't require me sitting around monitoring it. Sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/keepit or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/keepit. Keep It is brought to you by Mint Mobile. When we were kids, summer meant freedom. No homework, no teachers, no school. And as adults, summer still means freedom, thanks to Mint Mobile's summer sale. Right now, all of Mint's plans are $15 per month, even unlimited. So free yourself from big wireless and their gimmicks and gotchas and switch to Mint for high-speed data and coverage on the T-Mobile 5G network. You know what I like? A mobile network I can count on. Mint is that. And it's very, there's no ghosts or strange strings to learn about in the closet. You get what they say you're going to get.
That's right. Mint Mobile took what was wrong with wireless and made it right with premium wireless for $15 a month. You can't beat that. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can even bring your current phone and your number. You can choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly bill. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile. It's so easy. You can sign up online and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/keepit. That's mintmobile.com/keepit. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/keepit. That's it. There's no catch. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12 months. Plan required, $15 per month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra, initial plan term only. Greater than 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Includes up to 20 gigabytes hotspot. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com. Our guest this week is an Academy Award-nominated actress, former ballerina, and Bay Area native. You know her from movies like Top Gun Maverick, A Complete Unknown, and the TV show Unreal, RIP. You can fall even further in love with her in her new rom-com, One Night Only, a movie where premarital sex is banned all year except for, you guessed it, One Night Only. The film is in theaters this Friday. Please welcome to Keep It the lovely Monica Barbaro.
Monica, my Bay Area sister.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Sacramento, but then I moved to Oakland and went to San Francisco State. So when I saw that you were from the Bay, I was like, my Bay Area girl.
Oh my God. Yeah. Incredible. My first ever film was with a bunch of graduates from San Francisco State.
Yes. We're very artsy over there.
Yeah. It's a great school. I love it there. Oh.
Well, I love seeing Bay Area natives conquer and kill it all over the world. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Now, my first question as it pertains to rom-coms, and this is, by the way, a rom-com, even though it's very high concept and seems apocalyptic and has implications politically. Yes, exactly. But I was wondering how hard it is as an actor to film a rom-com compared to any other genre, because you've really done the gambit at this point. You know what I mean? You've been in action movies, you've been in, prestige biopics, et cetera. How hard is it to film a rom-com?
Yeah, I think the only genre I'm missing right now is kind of horror and kind of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Well, for sure horror, for sure sci-fi, but I think this movie in some ways almost has a sci-fi horror.
Right.
Like if Handmaid's Tale is sci-fi, then this is as well. I don't know. It doesn't really apply. But rom-coms.
This feels like horror a little bit to me.
Totally.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't have to be gory because this is frightening.
Yes, 100%. I agree. I mean, the fun thing about a rom-com is that it really is just like everyone's just falling in love and making each other laugh. You know, like you're just talking about who you love in your life and funny dating stories and bringing all the love that you experience in your own life to the, you know, character and to the story, and then just trying to make things as like funny as possible and play within those bounds somehow. And it's just like a blast. Like it's always difficult making a movie. You wind up like 3 a.m. freezing cold outside, you know, in some like dire situation. But this is maybe the best context to do that in, because it's just like love and fun.
This, I really love the, like, I feel like we're returning to the traditional rom-coms, but I love that this kind of has a spin, because I do love a fun, like, general rom-com with the twist, which clearly we have here. What was it about this script that drew you to this? Did you like that there was this twist in it?
Yes, I loved it. I mean, at first I thought it was absolutely absurd, the premise. But it made me laugh, and it made me immediately start thinking about, like, well, if that's true, then what else? And how are they going to build the world for this? And so that for me was like, well, if it's grabbing me, it's going to grab people with, you know, all kinds of curiosity. And then when I talked to Will did this thing where he was like, I don't want to send her the script yet, but I want to meet with her. And I was like, okay, that usually means the script is like not in great shape. So I meet with him, and like, he is so funny and so kind, and we just got along immediately. I thought it was a great sign that he was funny, because he's making comedies. I really liked his previous works. And then he also said for this film, conceptually, he was sort of envisioning it like an Uncut Gems or After Hours or Midnight Run. Those were the films that he was like, watch that for the tone. And I was like, what? You're a rom-com guy. Like, what do you mean? None of those are rom-coms. And then I realized, like he was talking about the kind of like frenetic, chaotic energy that he wants this story to have and that he wants to represent in New York City, and like the way certain holidays are in New York City. And I thought that was so cool, so interesting. Then I received the script, and it was so funny and so great. And he said nothing disparaging about the script. He just wanted to like get ahead of it. And I was reading it at the same time as some other people who I love and trust their opinions. And like, we were texting each other, like, I'm really laughing a lot reading this script. So it just kind of like fired on all cylinders. It just felt like a no-brainer. I knew I wanted, I was happy to do a rom-com, but I just felt twice as excited by this like kind of crazy vision he had for it.
Actually, After Hours makes sense, because this is it takes place in New York, and it's about like both of these people running into one obstacle after another, re-encountering obstacles they thought they got over, and then each other is also sort of an obstacle. So I'm actually not surprised to hear that. But I was also just thinking, like, when you film a rom-com, it feels like half of your work is filming reaction shots where you're maybe charmed or annoyed or whatever. It's almost like you have to go through like flashcards of emotions and display them to convey them to the audience. And I was wondering, how does that get pedantic after a while, like having to like illustrate, you know, charm or, you know, loving somebody or whatever.
You know what? It's so funny. Jay Baruchel and I were talking about this on a show I did called FUBAR. Just that, like, it's very easy to get sucked into kind of like your Rolodex of emotions. And you can get to a point in the work where you do that. Like, you can survive as an actor doing that, but it's not very invigorating to do it that way. Like, I personally feel like, I mean, one of the most wonderful things about working with James Mangold on A Complete Unknown was that he sniffs it out from a mile away, and he's like, don't do that. And I think, like, the most interesting work is not giving over to that. I think, like, a lot of the way TV shows film, you can become sort of enslaved by working that way. And, like, it's the most convenient way to get a day done because you're shooting so many pages so quickly in such a condensed way. You're just like, right, deliver that flashcard, moving on. And, like, you can get stuck in that. But what I love about filmmaking is that you have the time to kind of, like, carve out more genuine experiences and responses. And I think it's helpful to have that skill, but to really not rely on it as a crutch, because it can just become really boring, and I think the characters start to just kind of, like, slip away when you do that. I think audiences are more attuned to it than you would think, or even maybe they realize that they are, because when you're not seeing a sort of, like, organic response to something, it just doesn't have that, like, spice to it. And so what was great about Will Gluck was that he just always wanted to, like, foster the most, like, genuine, truthful responses and environments. And he wasn't looking for me or Callum to be comedic actors so much as just, like, really acting the stakes and circumstances and letting the situation be the comedic element.
Well, speaking of, like, elements, because it's one thing to talk about, like, the emotion, but then you add in the fact that you sang in this.
Yeah.
And that's a different kind of perfection, I would imagine, as an artist, you know, acting as one lane and then singing as a different one. And you might handle them differently, right? You might, I know I'm a perfectionist, so I can imagine, like, as a singer and actor, you approach it differently. Was it difficult for you to act while singing?
I mean, the coolest thing I've ever learned about singing is that to sing really well, yes, there's a lot of technical elements, but, like, the greatest songs and musical performances are, it's storytelling at its heart. Like, the best, most iconic performances are not necessarily someone with the most beautiful voice. It's, like, it's the power and passion that they have for the story they're telling behind the song. So that was actually quite comforting for me to learn in my singing on film journey. The difficult thing for me being a perfectionist was the part where I'm like, but I also want to sound amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to do that. Because I'm not, like, I don't have a background in singing. I've just done it in two films now. And, like, I kept thinking it would get easier this time around. And, like, I was still in my trailer, like, fully crying before I had to sing that day, because I was just like, I can't do it. It makes me so scared. And then at the end of the day, I'm like, I did it. I feel great.
No, I so, love that. I love the challenge of it, being scared. I think when you, you've been nominated for an Oscar, so you're a pro. So it's cool to hear that there are things that still terrify you and you run towards it.
I think my whole career is exposure therapy. Like, I have, like, so much social anxiety, and the number of, like, Hollywood parties I've had to attend completely solo in high heels, being taller than everybody. I was like, there's nothing more anxiety inducing than my own job. But I guess I just keep going towards that.
Now, speaking
fear.
Of a Complete Unknown, I think one of my favorite things about that movie and what elevates it above most, not just music biopics, but biopics in general, is how legitimately it seems ensconced in the time in which it takes place. Like, it felt very legitimately the 1960s. And it wasn't just the look of the movie. It's that, there's no other way to put this, no one in the movie had iPhone face. It felt like you were people from that time. And obviously you're playing Joan Baez, who has particular traits and a particular sound. But do you remember making any choices to illustrate that you were a 1960s person, to differentiate from how you would play this character if it was modern?
Well, I mean, for one, I definitely was on my phone a lot less. Like, I deleted all social media apps. I in part because we were getting papped and then people I knew would just be like cruel and I was already too scared. I didn't need them telling me to be scared. And then just like really immersing myself in the folk music scene as much as possible. I mean, I think again, my hat kind of, it just goes off to Jim in that respect, because he was so meticulous about creating that kind of authenticity. And I think luckily, like, people who were alive in that era also felt that way. I think that was the most rewarding experience of that movie, was getting to talk to people after a screening and see people who I could tell like didn't even necessarily let themselves get emotional, really, still having waves of emotion about having experienced something that encapsulated their time so truthfully. Because I think that's really rare. As you get older, you know, younger filmmakers like take a stab at that time period and get it wrong a lot. And I think the 60s it's one of those times that like really sits with people, because they were a part of like huge change, and it remains so deep in their core. And then to get to see someone like honor that the way Jim did, I think was just like miraculous. But it was like everything. It was like he didn't want us to have perfect skin. He didn't want, you know, like any if something had just been painted, he wanted it painted over with something to make it like muddy. Like, they would smoke inside hotel rooms back then. So like the walls would be kind of like sooty and ashen or like brown and kind of, you know, like everything just had it was just different. And so he really like wanted that authenticity. No guitar was like too shiny, or he wouldn't let any guitar be shiny or like any microphone look too fresh, or, you know, our hair, our makeup, like everything had to be. I almost wore like no makeup at all. The only things I wore were to like kind of like accentuate a jawline that looked more like hers or something like that. And I wore teeth to like, again, like to look less pristine, like mine are, like white teeth. He wanted them to look more like yellowed and more like, you know, how they were at that time. So it kind of, I think there was a lot of favors done to us in terms of the world that was built around us by our incredible crew.
I want to say that Bill Skarsgård, when I interviewed him here, was talking about how you can always tell when somebody doesn't do a good job in a period film, because the vintage cars look too shiny. like they just rented them, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, those are preserved cars. It's like, no. These were just the car. Also, I think a lot of people maybe make the mistake of being like, this was 1963 and 64, 65. But it's like in 1963, the car landscape was like the cars from the 50s. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally you'd have a new car from 63, but you wouldn't have, you know, and I don't know that people don't necessarily always process that or care. I think it has to do with what the priority of the film is too.
Right.
If you want splashy 1963, then there's a way to do that. You can make it look polished in that way and it works. But if you really want authenticity, and our story was a story of folk music, which is all about like, you know, going back to your roots and being like less consumerist, then you need to show the heart of the 50s in your story instead, kind of thing.
I love that. I'm craving imperfections these days because everything seems so perfect. So I wanted to talk to you about the imperfection of this movie and how you would survive that one night. Like, are you going to jail, girl? Because they're going to have to lock me up. I'm not going to survive in this film, in your new film. I don't think I'm going to survive it. I can't. One night, baby, 364 days? How well, if this happened tomorrow, well would you be able to make it to next August, or am I going to have to bail you out?
The trouble is we would, I think our neighboring countries would have a refugee crisis and I would be running to those borders.
We're all Canadians.
Yeah, yeah, right.
We're
yeah.
all Canadians.
Look
now.
Out, Saskatoon.
So beyond
yeah, I
this,
mean, different times in my life, different things. I mean, maybe younger, I would have been like, well, I have to put up with it. And now at this age, I'm like, get me out of here.
I saw recently you guys just had your premiere in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my question
last
is
night.
we've all done the premiere thing. When you leave the premiere, what's the first thing you do?
When I leave the premiere?
Yeah, like what's the first thing you do? Because for me, I'm going to In-N-Out if I'm in LA.
Usually I order French fries at the hotel. I don't know if I've ever done a premiere at home. Yeah, I've never gone home from a premiere. They're always in some other city or I'm like in a hotel near the premiere mm-hmm. location in LA because I live like East Side LA and they don't do premieres out there. So I've never gone straight home, but I would probably stop for fast food after. I've done that like many an event. But yeah, I usually order fries, but this hotel doesn't have a full kitchen right now because it's like under construction, so I couldn't do that.
Ugh, unacceptable.
Oh, yeah. we gotta get you French fries the next time we see you. That's our goal.
Thank you so much. I ate a bagel this morning though, so it felt New York and, you know, beautifully carbo indulgent. It was great.
And also, speaking of the concept of one night only, before we let you go, do you have any particular memories from Oscar night when you were nominated? Which, by the way, very interesting category. Lots of, like, interesting performances that year. That's Ariana Grande and Isabella Rossellini and Zoe mm-hmm. Saldana won that year. Do you have any particular memories of that crowd and that
Felicity
night?
Felicity Jones.
Yes, Felicity Jones. Yes, who's, fabulous in that movie.
Oh, well, you know, I gotta say, since you mentioned the category, Divine introduced the category and spoke to all of us in the most, I mean, the word is divine, you know, but like in the most magical, honoring, heartfelt, soulful, present way that I kind of like floated out of my seat listening to her speak about my work and then everyone else's. I never expected anything like that. Sometimes those award things feel a bit like a game show and they're kind of just like, it's tense, but like, it was just this, just to be honored in that way by her speaking to me like that felt like the most transformative career experience I could have possibly had. Like, it was one thing to have the nomination, unbelievable, incredible, so honored. But to have that moment, it felt kind of like transcending time and space. And like, I feel like I was awarded everything in just that moment. I really was inspired by her. I tried to say something like that at an after party to her, and I think I just stumbled over my words and was like, and she was like, okay. Again, so graceful and elegant about the whole thing, but and like cool and kind. But yeah, I was really blown away by her poise and again elegance in that moment. That was like the coolest thing in the world. And getting to be there with my dad was pretty awesome too.
Yeah, she went to Yale. So, you know, like, she can really bring it in a speech teamy way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to be so intelligent, which she obviously is. It's another to like yield that with such grace and generosity. And I still get chills when I think about it. Like, just, and not even that it was even to me. It was just something about like the whole room just kind of, I don't know, hushed in a different way. She's like a power. She's a goddess. She's like a powerhouse. It was just kind of miraculous.
I love hearing things like that, that you almost think there's a certain place that people get where they don't get impressed by things anymore. I feel like we're exposed to so much. I love when hearing people say they get goosebumps with things like, you know, I think the giddiness really shows how much people love their craft when you're never too cool for anything. You know, so I guess lastly, I would love to know, when is the last time, you know, you geeked out over your career? Like, when were you just like, this is fucking cool?
Honestly, I have that all the time. I'm kind of like, I'm not the cool comp. I mean, there are certain things that I've like become more jaded to, like going to the Vanity Fair party and just seeing like celebrity after celebrity. I've gotten to a point where I'm sort of like, oh yeah, like I am more used to that room, as chaotic and crazy as it is. I think the moments, but I have those moments all the time. Like even just seeing My friends were trying to take a picture of me in front of my own billboard that was like riding by on a cab. And like they kept missing it because a cab would like go behind a bus. But it happened like five times that a cab went by with my bill. And then that I was like, the fact that we've tried to do this five times on this short walk because there's been so many of this billboard everywhere, it's a little overwhelming, but it's also like, huh? That's crazy. And like I can feel embarrassed by how much outward like sort of projection that is, but at the same time, I feel like it's so cool to have made a movie that Universal likes enough to put that much energy and, you know, financial support behind, because they don't do that if it's a dud. It's not like they need to like make their money back on this really expensive movie, as far as I can tell. Like they just really believe in it and they want people to see it, and I want people to see it. So that just like, it's just exciting. That just like feels really good, really invigorating.
I love that. And I saw your billboard on my way here, so I'm going to take a picture. We'll make sure
we're going to say, right. We're doing the hard work.
They're all over.
They're supposed to be.
Monica, thank you so much for being here. Such a delight to talk to.
Thank you so much for having me. So nice meeting you guys.
Keep It is brought to you by iRestore. So you know I'm skincare obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that the Illumina face mask that iRestore created is incredible. And red light therapy, I'm obsessed with it. I do red light therapy at least five nights a week.
I love red lights, period. Like in the song Roxanne?
Well, yes. And it goes very well with your skin tone.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I'm wearing red today. So that was shout out to iRestore. A new season is the perfect time for fresh routines, small resets, and recommitting to things that make you feel your best. And if upgrading your hair and skincare routine has been on your mind like it has been on mine, this is your time to start. iRestore has been leading the way in red light therapy for over two decades, helping shape the category with clinically backed devices trusted by over 500,000 customers worldwide. And as more people look for a simple and effective way to support their hair and skin health at home, iRestore continues to offer advanced devices that are designed to fit seamlessly into your routine.
The iRestore Elite is the most advanced laser hair growth system, using 300 lasers and 200 LEDs to help regrow thicker, healthier hair in as little as 3 months. It's effortless. Just wear it while working, reading, or unwinding at night. And the Illumina face mask, now that's my girl. Lightweight, cordless, and packed with 2 times more LEDs than other top masks, it targets fine lines, breakouts, and dullness with triple wavelength light therapy. Just 10 minutes a few times a week for brighter, smoother, healthier looking skin. And here's the best part. You can bundle the iRestore Elite and Illumina face mask together, making it the perfect time to upgrade your routine. Whether you're refreshing your regimen or finally giving your hair and skin the attention they deserve, this bundle delivers powerful results and even better value for a limited time.
The iRestore Illumina face mask is a dermatologist recommended mask that packs double the power of other masks with 360 medical grade LEDs. There are 3 wavelengths for all of your skin concerns. The red light and infrared light wavelength helps with anti-aging, increased collagen production, hyperpigmentation, and improved blood flow to the skin. The blue light helps reduce blemishes, clear acne, and prevent breakouts and shrink pores. And it's one of the first masks on the market that allows you to use all 3 modes at the same time. Red light therapy works. I am proof of that. iRestore is offering some huge discounts on their red light therapy devices. Right now, you can save on customer favorites like iRestore Elite Helmet and the Illumina face mask. Just head to iRestore.com and use code KEEPIT. That's KEEPIT at iRestore.com. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Give your hair and skin the upgrade they deserve so you can feel confident and refreshed.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across 6 southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th. Watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Lewis, it is time for the hottest part of the episode. It's Keep It. I'm going to start on your behalf.
Okay.
Because we've been talking about your birthday.
Yes.
So keep it to simple birthday messages.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And I just want to say, and I appreciate everyone in my life and everyone's lovely. It's depressing to just get a birthday message that says happy birthday, nothing else. Or HBD.
HBD, I will block you.
Yeah.
HBD is crazy. HBD with a period? Do you hate me?
Right. Why not just say nothing?
What? I actually would prefer you to just not wish me a happy birthday. I know we're all overstimulated and everybody is busy. But I do think on someone's birthday, you take a moment. I don't care if it's a pre-written text. I actually don't care if you have AI do it. But baby, when you're reaching out to someone, me and you have been talking about birthday messages and people showing up. And I would rather have like three genuine people show up for my birthday than 10 million HBD texts. Because I think it's, you know, listen, not everybody celebrates their birthday. But I think if you can't even be bothered to give a little short paragraph to your friend or family member or loved one, I think we're losing the plot a little bit. It gets to a point.
I wonder if like the world of Facebook birthdays has eliminated right. the part in people's brains where they remember, you know, buying a nice card for somebody and say like expressing a sentiment sure. of some kind. But it's like, I think the whole point of a birthday is you're supposed to appreciate the person,
yes.
right? So it's about like knowing, remembering one specific thing. Now, here's the thing. I know a lot of people, for example, aren't funny. That's not how they express themselves. Mm-hmm. For funny people, this is sort of what we do.
This is
right?
your thing.
We take the specifics and we throw them back at you. And, yes. you know, so we're like primed to give a happy birthday message. But even just adding some specific sentiment afterwards is like perfectly lovely. That's it.
I just think, you know, a birthday is a good time for reflection. I always try to send like a cute little, even if it's just something personable, or like I have a new friend whose birthday is this weekend and I text her and just said, I'm so excited about our growing friendship. Happy birthday. Hope you feel special. Like it's not super complicated. It takes you 5 seconds. That being said, sometimes things slip your mind. Sometimes you forget. But if you send a HBD, you do not like that person. You do not care.
No. I'm sorry. The word that comes to mind is it's rude. It's you like checking a box
yes.
as opposed to like saying
it's like
happy
a chore.
Birthday. Yeah. Right.
And I don't even want to tribute on, you don't have to do, because I am not good at that. Like posting, a lot of people post on Instagram stories like these, and I don't need that. And I rarely do it. I have to be in the mood to do a whole post about somebody.
Oh yeah. Me neither. That's not
that's
I
not my
it.
Thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I don't,
yeah.
and I don't require it either, but I think like there is something really cool about someone just thinking about you for a hot second.
Yeah.
And if you can't, God bless.
Yeah.
But don't send me no, like, you know, shadow of a text.
Right. No,
keep
this
it,
still
baby.
Took up a portion of my, shall we say, one day, you know?
Yeah. You I know. Mean, I had someone send me a Venmo request on my birthday. we still don't talk
Okay,
to
I might do that. I might do that.
I said, bitch, are you sending me a Venmo request on my day? For a brunch we did a week ago. I said, you could have waited a day?
Yeah, right. Tomorrow exists.
I said, how dare you? every year, your birthday reveals things to you. And I think it reveals people.
Yeah,
and I
right.
think it reveals, you know.
I agree. Unfortunately, I do think it's a bit telling.
And I hate that people put so much pressure on birthdays, but I do think it's kind of a once-a-year sweep on what you mean to folks.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And you hope it's meaningful.
You
know,
hope.
As opposed to just I'm a person you interact with sometimes.
I don't care how old you are. You in your feelings if someone close to you forgets your birthday. I don't care. You can pretend and say it's not a big deal. You don't celebrate your birthday. Someone close to you just doesn't reach out on your birthday. It hurts your feelings.
Yeah.
It's just something childlike in all of us that bothers us. And it may not be damaging forever, but there's a little, you feel a little tinge of like, well, damn, especially if you showed up for them.
Right, certainly.
So,
no, I concur. Wow, that actually you uncovered a large well for me.
This, I listen. Yeah. If y'all are gonna say happy birthday to Lewis, y'all make it meaningful or don't send it at all.
Just a quick limerick. You
just,
know what I mean?
You know what I mean?
Lots of saucy things rhyme with Lewis. I'm sure.
Send a Jeopardy quote. Send him a question.
Yeah,
something, but make it special.
Also, speaking of which, Mark Gaberman, one of the writers of Jeopardy, made me a legit clue about myself with like using the font and
that
shit.
Is
it
so
was
cute.
So
for
lovely.
Your birthday?
Yes. Yeah.
Now that is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. You don't got to spend a lot of money. It's
yeah.
But he thought about you.
Yeah, and he knew. Please, I was like holding it in front of like my family and loved ones. I was like, don't look at me.
I love you. So you got to know how to speak somebody's language.
Yes.
So that's my keep it. And I don't care how anybody feels about it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
My keep it this week is unfortunately another summer-centric one. You know I'm a summer yes. doll, up, down, horizontally, backwards. keep it to not putting more respect on August's name. August has no occasions, and it's a very hot month.
It's a brutal month.
But do you know what I love about it? The rest of the summer is so fucking busy with people running around, like 4th of July. They're just like gay pride. Like, whereas August is the one summer month where you can actually just hang out with the people you like spend your life with. Like, first, I think August in LA or summer in LA is generally very pleasant. Like, it doesn't get too hot here. You know what I mean? Like, we've had humid times recently.
We're going through a heat wave right now, though.
Yes. But I am just loving this time here where, like, you go out and, like, maybe actually just go to the bars you want to go to, and it's summer weather and it's a little sticky. We all look like we're in the I'm a Slave for You video. We're all in the Santana Smooth video all the time. And I just want to say it's the best time of year to have a birthday because everyone—
Is it?
Because there's no summer events, but people want to do summer things.
This is
because
you are August, baby. August is the worst.
Oh, bitch. No. Sorry. Don't you interrupt. Keep it on my birthday. You are fall down, though. You're dressed fall right now.
I wish it was fall all year long. You know, I'm an October baby.
Yeah.
But you know, this is just, I'm just throwing shade at Lewis because he said he hated the fall, and I took that personal.
You know what? I call fall summer's funeral. I prefer fall to winter. I mean to say
yes,
that. Yeah.
Yes. No, I mean, August, you know, this is the only month without a holiday except for your birthday.
Yes.
But it's so hot everywhere you go. Like, it's just so hot in August.
But don't we love it? Oh,
oh
my
I hate
God.
It.
I'm in the tropics.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I want a layer. I want a trench coat.
Oh,
you know, I want a little scarf.
You know what? I will say one time I bought a trench coat, like, just because I love the look of it. I miss when everybody dressed like they were in Working Girl. I miss that. In L.A., you have no opportunity to wear a trench coat.
No.
It doesn't belong in the winter. It doesn't belong in fall. Yeah.
I think I've said this before. I may have one umbrella somewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I bought all these, like, really cool trench coats a couple of years ago, and I only wear them when I'm in New York.
Totally. Yeah.
My fashion game in New York is so different. Because in L.A., it's just like, you know, we wear sweatshirts and flip-flops out here. Like, it's really an aesthetic. Like, we don't need them.
Have you ever lived in New York?
Yeah.
How long?
Oh, not long.
That's what I mean.
I didn't make it long.
I mean, you seem way more New York to me than LA.
But I was bi-coastal the last, like, 4 or 5 years. I've been bi-coastal because my clothing line headquarters was based in New York. So I spent a lot. I would spend, like, 1 week out of the month in New York for, like, the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So I was there quite a bit. So it infused in me, I think.
That said, I do think August in New York sounds like a fate worse than death.
I am not a humidity girly.
No, me neither.
You see
please.
These curls?
No.
Please. This is, humidity whoops my ass every time.
No, excuse me. If I'm outside for 5 seconds in that kind of humidity, I look like a Nick Nolte mugshot.
That being said, I think you're right. Maybe I'll revisit my relationship with August.
Yeah.
You know.
I like times where, like, we're not laden with, like ticketed events or whatever. We can just, like, actually hang and be personable.
I think school
it's about
is also
soul ultimately,
like,
for me. Oh,
school
I
is
hate
looming
back
over
to
me
school.
Because
I hate
traffic,
back to school shit. Yeah.
You know, like, I was thinking today when I was driving here, I was like, oh, this is in a month, this is going to be so much more worse because everybody's going to be back in school again. Mm. And so that I do love August. The freeways are a little thinner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can get around a little bit better, but there's also looming. August feels like a Sunday.
Because
Monday's on this motherfucking way.
Yeah. And you know what the Monday is? The fall, because it sucks. Walked right into that.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I set myself up for that. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening.
And thank you to Monica Barbaro for being
here.
We will be back next week with Get This, an all-new episode.
That's right.
We'll see you then. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Rustin, Kelsey Gante, Kendra James, Lindsay Gomez, and me, Louis Vertel. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, Mia Kalman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across 6 Southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold,
and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th, watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.